After 7 years as Conan O'Brien's sidekick, Andy Richter left Late Night in June of 2000 to act. Last month, he returned to TV as the star of his own sitcom, Andy Richter Controls the Universe. He plays a single guy who works at a corporation writing manuals. The action alternates between what's really happening and the fantasy version of events happening in his mind. In one episode, Andy falls for a beautiful woman and can't believe his good luck when he finds she's attracted to him. Everything's going great, until something she says makes him realize she's anti-Semitic. But he doesn't want to believe what he knows is true.
It could have been a lot of things. I needed more information, so I came up with a foolproof anti-Semitism test.
Would you like a bagel? Or perhaps a Waldenreichen Lebensraum Torte?
Oh, thanks.
She has chosen the time-honored food of the Jewish people. She's not a bigot.
Boy, those Jews are so cheap, they don't even give you the middle of the bagel.
Oi.
Leslie, I gotta tell you, it bothers me when you say stuff like that.
Oh, my God. You're not Jewish, are you?
No, I just think it's wrong to stereotype people.
Oh, I see what's going on here. You must have some Jewish friends or something, and you feel self-conscious about it.
Wait a minute. This is not my problem.
Andy, let's not argue. We don't have to like the same books, the same music, the same races. Can't we just agree to disagree about this one thing?
No, people are just people.
And that's your opinion. All I'm asking is that you respect mine. Oh, look, we've just had our first fight. I'm glad it was over something small.
Andy Richter, who came up with that premise for this episode of meeting a woman who you're very attracted to, but the attraction only lasts so long because she's anti-Semitic?
It was just one of the ideas that came, you know, that was sort of gang written by the writers on the show. I think that we as a group like things that are funny that are also kind of uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And this is definitely uncomfortable to a lot of people. And I felt what I really like about that episode is that you see plenty of shows where somebody is dating somebody that they're mismatched with, but it's usually some sort of thing about, you know, oh, she snores or she, you know, has a goofy laugh. And I've never seen anyone, there be a lighthearted romp through someone's anti-Semitism. So I sort of felt like that it was, you know, that it was a funny idea and it was a different idea, and that, yeah, it's also uncomfortable and kind of, you know, naughty in a serious way. But, I don't think that it's unreal. I don't think that it's not true to life.
Were you confident when you left Late Night with Conan O'Brien that you would get movie roles and TV roles? Or did you feel like you were kind of jumping off the edge and hoping that you'd land?
A little bit of both. A lot more confidence than there was the fear of the leap of faith. But because I just kind of felt, in retrospect, I feel scared in retrospect because I feel like I wasn't even aware. I wasn't allowing myself to be aware of what a leap it was. But I just thought, I know enough about Hollywood to know that Hollywood really wants whatever it can't have. And a lot of people that worked on the Conan show stay on the Conan show because it's a very happy place to work, and it's a really fun little privately run laboratory of comedy that has a serious lack of adult supervision. So a lot of people love working there and work there a long time. And when people do leave the Conan show, I've seen sort of the clamor to get them from television networks or television studios. It has a cachet within the industry. So I just knew there'd be something for me. It wasn't the first couple of years I was worried about. It was the third year. I mean, if I had gone through the development process and nothing happened, and I would, you know, because I like, if this show doesn't go, I feel like, well, I could probably still get another development deal out of somebody. It's just the way the business works. There's plenty of people here in Los Angeles who have been making money for years just not working for somebody else. Somebody pays them to not work for somebody else. And they, you know, you can stretch that out for a few years.
Right. Andy Richter is my guest. He's formerly Conan O'Brien's sidekick on Late Night with Conan O'Brien. Now he has his own show called Andy Richter Controls the Universe. When you were growing up, in addition to watching, like, network TV, were there, like, bizarre local shows that you used to watch because they were so weird or so amateurish?
Yeah. In Chicago, there was a guy. There's a station in Chicago called WGN, which is owned by the Chicago Tribune, and it's been around forever. And it's kind of was a precursor of the Superstation. It was on early cable systems around the country. And they carry Chicago Cubs games, and then also lots of strange kids shows, like they have a Bozo the Clown show. Ray Rayner was a children's host who basically was just a grown man who would wear orange jumpsuits and show cartoons and feed a goose, and then at times just put on marching music and march around the set with the goose. And that would take up an hour every morning. And I don't think at the time, you know, as a child, I didn't think of it as odd. it was just television.
Now, you studied improv for a while. You worked, I think, with Del Close in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's not a very familiar name. Tell us about him.
Well, he's one of the. He's heavily influential because he taught a lot of people that are responsible for sort of the modern state of sketch comedy, I guess. He was one of the first people that was with the Compass, a group in Chicago that was the precursor of Second City. And he pretty much invented long-form improvisation, which is what most of the groups in Chicago sort of specialize in, especially the Improv Olympic, which is what his group was. But he taught people like Bill Murray and John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd and Mike Myers and people, you know, and Chris Farley, and, you know, just taught many, many people how to be funny and an artistic way to be funny and a set of rules that if you follow them, you'd be hard pressed to do bad work if you follow the rules that he teaches you. And he passed away a few years ago, but he's tremendously, I wouldn't hesitate to say there would not be a Saturday Night Live, which, you know, good or bad, whatever your opinion of that show, it's a pretty important part of the comedy landscape, and in just in a historical sense, it wouldn't be there if it weren't for Del Close.
What were some of Del Close's rules for improvisation?
Well, they're agreement. It's treating comedy different from drama, and that sort of the fuel of drama is conflict. But if you're improvising a scene, it doesn't work to have conflict. It just sort of stops. It's more about the flow of something. So if someone comes into a scene and says, doctor, my back is killing me, you don't say, I'm not a doctor, I'm an umbrella salesman, because you might get a laugh, but then where do you go? You've made the other person look like an idiot, and that's it. The scene is over. But if you say, you know, well, in order to get in order to fix your back, you have to get on this snowmobile. You know, then you've started something. They call it yes and. You agree and add to it. And then there's also different. One of the rules that it mirrors an acting rule, which is that the actor is a slave to the text, that the actual performance piece is more important than the actor himself. It's the same. There's a rule in improv, which is no one player is more important than the group. So it's trying to create a group mind, and it's downplaying selfishness.
Now, you had a small part in the Chris Elliott movie Cabin Boy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I understand when that movie came out, you were actually working in a movie theater in Los Angeles as an assistant manager.
I had run out of money and was starting to apply for jobs. And the day that I got hired on the Conan show, I got called back to re-interview. You know, I got called a callback as an actor. I got, you know, they wanted to come and interview me for this job as an assistant manager, which I was deathly afraid of Cabin Boy coming out and me being behind the counter making popcorn when it came out. And and people thinking it was some kind of publicity stunt.
And it would just be the sad truth.
It would just be sad, pathetic truth.
So, you know, you've done all comedies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on TV, comedy roles in movies, comedy with Conan O'Brien. Do you have the ambition of, like, doing drama, whether it's, like, you know, playing the hard-boiled detective or having your shot at Macbeth?
The hard-boiled detective more than Macbeth. Macbeth is way too much memorization. I would be fun. I really love being in this business, and I feel tremendously lucky because I feel like I've found the vocation for which I am suited, and I want to work at it for a long, long time. I said when I left the Conan show and people were comparing me to David Caruso, who left NYPD Blue and then his career faltered, I said, I'm not trying to be Warren Beatty. I'm trying to be Ned Beatty. So I think I can pull that off. I hope, and I would be very happy to, because I think he's Ned Beatty's a tremendously talented man,
Well, Andy Richter, thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Andy Richter's new Fox sitcom is called Andy Richter Controls the Universe. This is Fresh Air.